American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And it is a good day. This is Ryan Robson reporting to you from Ethnet for Monday, September 26, 2011. You are listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit-Rep on corporate liberalism, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening to this program, you are too. Also standing up for free speech is Misanthropic Gods.
You can follow all these news stories and check our facts by going to the Rant Media forums and looking under Newsreel for a post with today's date. You can get there by going to smf.rantradio.com. This would be a free podcast. It can be heard on Rant Radio Talk, Galaxy 15 Radio, and recorded live in Second Life every Thursday night at 7 p.m. SL time at Grid Archers 155-74666. What we need most of all right now is your support. If you have something to send us, please email us at news@rostudios.org. That is news@rostudios.org. Joining us live in Second Life today is Morp Skytower, Roshan Amaratsu, and Legion Rosenman.
Okay, so a bit of show news. Well, we've got an RSS feed up. It's a bit experimental. I don't know much about RSS, and I put this together myself. So just let me know if there's any problems with it. It's rostudios.org/feed.rss. So try that out. Let me know. I'll put up a link on the actual Newsreel page at some point. It's not up there yet, so if you have to go to it directly, that's rostudios.org/feed.rss. Also, this week we got several stories from multiple people, so a bunch of people sent us the same story. When that happens, I just go through and pick out the best link and then credit the first person who gave it to me. So if you hear your story but not your name, sorry, someone else got to it first.
Just a little note here to Hugo, because I seem to have changed things without notifying him. I did add a story right before the Daily Hacks and Recomedia and all that stuff. So it's between your last news story and my all my stuff. So just letting you know.
Okay, so I'll stop there and let you go. Right into our regular news. In Who's Thinking These Things Up news, thanks to Jewel Verboven for this. British to test geoengineering scheme. In October, British researchers supported by the UK government will attempt to pump water a kilometer into the air using little more than a helium balloon and a rubber hose. In the experiment, which will take place at a military airfield along England's east coast, is meant as a test of a proposed geoengineering technique for offsetting warming effects of greenhouse gases. If the balloon and hose can handle the water's weight and pressure, similar pipes rising 20 kilometers could pump tons of reflective aerosols into the stratosphere. The scheme, called SPICE, Stratospheric Particle Injection for Climate Engineering, is one of the several proposed geoengineering methods under study. In this case, the idea is the particles injected into the stratosphere would reflect a small percentage of the sun's energy back into space, thereby cooling the planet. The concept seeks to mimic the cooling effect of volcanoes that inject sulfide particles into the atmosphere in large quantity. A 2009 study by the UK Meteorological Office estimated that 10 million metric tons of sulfide particles injected annually into the stratosphere would cool the planet by approximately 2 Celsius within a few years. Other methods of geoengineering have also been tested, including fertilizing oceans to encourage algae blooms and pulling carbon dioxide out of the air. But a 2009 report by the UK's Royal Society concluded that reflected aerosol injected into the stratosphere would be the least expensive and most effective way to rapidly cool the planet. In addition to the pipe tethered to the balloon, airplanes and rockets could be used to deploy the particles. But Hugh Hunt, a senior lecturer in engineering at the University of Cambridge and a member of the SPICE project, says the balloon and pipe approach that his group is testing will be significantly less expensive. Trying to use airplanes and rockets ends up costing 100 or even 1,000 times more than a pipe and a balloon, Hunt says. At an altitude of 20 kilometers, an airplane can only carry 1, maybe 2 tons of payload. This means 5 to 10 million fights per year, burning roughly 1% of global oil production. It seems unlikely that to me that that would be economically viable when a few dozen pipes would do just as good of a job.
This whole thing kind of strikes me in a little bit of a wrong way, you know. I mean, if any of you have ever seen the Animatrix and remember the series The Second Renaissance, the two-part episodes that were in the Animatrix there, you remember the image of the bombers flying over the whole world and distributing this, you know, black goop that just totally blocked out the atmosphere to try and, you know, cut off the solar electricity for the robot army there. And that's kind of what it seems like to me. I don't know if it's because I remember that specifically, and you know, the Second Renaissance I thought was absolutely badass in the Animatrix or what. But it really kind of worries me that we're pumping shit into our atmosphere. There's already enough crap in our atmosphere to begin with. Do we really want to be doing this? Why don't we put a little bit more money, a little bit more research into some other stuff, and we'll see what we come up with.
The thing that bugs me most of all is the fact that, like, one, they're right now they're just pumping water up there. But they're only pumping water up to see if they can do it. They're going to be pumping aerosols that are reflective up there. Now, keep in mind that we don't know what that will do. Like, we know it'll cool the atmosphere most likely. It could also warm it if the amount of heat it reflects back to Earth is more than the amount of radiation it reflects away from Earth. So it could actually have a negative effect. But at the same time, do we know what these aerosols will do if they're pumped en masse into the atmosphere constantly? Like, I mean, DDT
and another thing is, you know, they don't say what these aerosols are. They just say reflective aerosols. And, you know, and if you think that, you know, we're a little bit paranoid, you know, think of what all the guys that are going on and on about the chemtrails and HARP and all that. Think of how those guys are going to be feeling whenever they're saying, yeah, we're going to be pumping reflective aerosols up into the atmosphere. Those guys are just going to totally blow their freaking mind.
Yeah, to me, I look at that and just go like, okay, we have no idea what the long-term effects of this is going to be. That doesn't matter what we put up there. We have no idea what the long-term effects are going to be. So why is this your primary plan? That's a terrible idea to go. Your plan A is something that you completely have not tested yet at all and have no idea what it's going to do 20, 30 years down the road.
Yeah, we have, you know, no long-term effects of, and like I said, they don't even mention what the hell it is that they're going to be pumping up into the atmosphere. So, yeah, you know, just something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, so the British stop being stupid about this kind of things. Okay, moving right along into another part of the world that's fucked. In drug cartel versus free speech news. Thanks to Fat Ninja for this one. Bodies hanging from bridge in Mexico are warning to social media users. Social media users who denounce drug cartel activities along the Mexican border received a brutal warning this week. Two mangled bodies hanging like cuts of meat from a pedestrian bridge. A woman was hogtied and disemboweled, her intestines protruding from deep throat and deep cuts in her abdomen. Attackers left her topless, dangling by her feet and hands from a bridge in the border city of Nuevo Laredo. I guess that's as close as I'm going to get. A bloody man next to her was hanging by his hands, his right shoulder severed so deeply that the bone was visible. Signs left near the bodies declared the pair, both apparently in their early 20s, were killed for posting denouncements of the drug cartel activities on a social network. This is going to happen to all of you posting funny things on the internet, one said. You better expletive pay attention. I'm about to get you. The gruesome scene sent a chilling message at a time when online posts have become some of the loudest voices reporting violence in Mexico. In some parts of the country, threats from cartels have silenced traditional media. Sometimes even local authorities fear speaking out. Mexico's notoriously ruthless drug gangs regularly hang victims from bridges and highway overpasses, and bloggers who specialize in sharing news about trafficking have been threatened in the past, but this could be the first time users of such social networks have been targeted. Investigator Ricardo Mencilas Castillo said he had not encountered a threat against internet users in his 4 years in Nuevo Laredo, but the signs of torture, the cuts, the disembowelment, were along the lines of what officials are used to seeing in drug-related violence. In the case of two victims found along the bridge on Tuesday, their ears and fingers were mutilated, said Mencilas, who works with the public prosecutor's office.
You know, again, I think I have to say this about every single time that we do a show. It happens, but, you know, watch what you say online. I mean, I recently had an experience where law enforcement was actually looking into me for something absolutely ridiculous and not illegal at all. But actually, I had law enforcement looking into me and my background and stuff like that, and they were asking for, you know, social media accounts is what they were asking for. And, you know, not only is law enforcement looking into it, but apparently now so is criminal elements, which doesn't surprise me in the slightest. I mean, this is an absolutely great information-finding tool. This is super easy to get information from, you know, and you're essentially putting yourself out there. You're making what you're saying public, you know. Would you go up to a whole bunch of gangbangers on the street and start, you know, spouting off about their news and everything? I don't think you would, because you'd end up getting fucked up. That's essentially what you're doing here. So, you know, just watch what you say. Remember that people are always watching.
I look at this a little bit of a different way. I'm looking at this from the perspective of, what's the major difference between these drug cartels and a totalitarian government? Pretty much the only difference is the totalitarian government is legitimized, and the drug cartels are based off of drugs and not control. So right now in Mexico, there's no debate that the drug cartels control most of Mexico. The government's afraid of them, the police are afraid of them, the media's afraid of them. The only people left who aren't really afraid of them are the bloggers. And so it's the only section of society they don't control. So if you look at this and think, a totalitarian government could get to this point if they were as ruthless as a drug cartel. So you gotta look at this and go, well, how can we, like, I totally support freedom of speech online. While I do agree, you should do some personal security and be careful what you post online. Being killed shouldn't be a thing people have to worry about posting a funny joke or whatever on Facebook. So, I mean,
Iran, China, you know, I mean, this is already happening. I mean, like I said, this is happening in Iran and China right now and other governments and excuse me, other countries like this, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, we look at that and go, we're basically looking at an illegitimate government here that's killing people who are speaking out against it. That's pretty much what this is. So, how do we go about this? I mean, the easiest way to do this is to get the hell out of Mexico, but a lot of people don't have that option. Is there some other way people can speak out without putting themselves on a line like this?
You know, I really can't think of any way that they could speak out and, you know, be completely anonymous. I mean, there are ways that you can be anonymous, but the general person on the street doesn't know how to do that. I mean, if you are going to be... like, I've heard stories of the media down there, you know, being specifically targeted for running news stories about, you know, shootouts in the street and stuff like that. Stuff that people notice. And, you know, they've been targeted and killed quite routinely in Mexico. So, I mean, really, nobody's safe. And if you're speaking out against these guys, I mean, you're painting a big red target on your chest. And it's very difficult to become anonymous, especially, you know, a lot of these small towns in Mexico. You know, Mexico City is one thing, but, you know, small town, you know, rural Mexico is totally different.
So, bottom line, if you can't protect yourself, keep quiet, keep your head low. If you are going to speak out like this, make sure you have some way to either get out of the situation or defend yourself. In Radio
Lots
Palooza,
and lots of guns.
Oh yeah, lots. You're in Mexico, you don't need guns. You need guns and a bulletproof house and lots of ammo. And some friends with guns. In Radio Pollution News, thanks Node. This is somewhat related to the one we did last week, except a little less crazy. A study released today reports that wireless smart meters being installed by PG&E and other utility companies in California are likely to violate Federal Communications Commission, FCC, safety limits as they are being installed and operated. Further, the study found that excessive elevated radio frequency radiation levels can be expected throughout homes and businesses where smart meters have been installed, comparable to living within 200 to 600 feet of a major cell tower in many cases. Which, if you're around major cell towers, typically you're not allowed to live that close to them, like really big ones. Health risks have been associated with published studies to levels commensurate with those of smart meters. The study, carried out by consulting firm Sage and Associates, finds that associated health impacts may include neurological symptoms such as headache, sleep disruption, restlessness, tremors, cognitive impairment, and tinnitus, which is that ringing in your ears, as well as increased cancer risk and heart problems such as arrhythmias, altered heart rhythms, which those are kind of the same thing, and palpitations. The study represents an independent refutation of what PG&E and other utilities claim are insignificant exposures to microwave radiation from their meters, says Joshua Harp, director of Stop Smart Meters. The reality is that smart meters emit radiation of a power and frequency that has been linked with DNA disruption, pathological leakage of the blood-brain barrier, which can lead to neuron death, and many other health impacts. The report is the final straw that if the CPUC refuses to act, Governor Brown must order an immediate halt to installation and deactivation of the installed meters, pending open public hearings on Hell's debacle could have been approved in the first place. Now, keep in mind, his claims there, I don't think they've been substantiated, but the main purpose of this article is the fact that the meters have been proven to exceed FCC limits. In other developments, Marin County on Tuesday became the fourth local government and second county in California to pass an ordinance specifically outlawing installation of smart meters, in large part due to health and safety issues. This unanimous decision follows two successive Board of Supervisors meetings that were packed with outraged residents demanding that the county government pass legislation to protect human health. It also follows a blockade of smart meters. It follows a blockade of smart meter trucks in West Marlin last weekend that resulted in the arrest of two mothers who blocked installation to protect health of their children and the community. People across California have complained about smart meters since the beginning, including widespread reports of inflated bills, privacy and hacking of personal information, electrical interference with cordless phones, baby monitors, home security systems, and critical care equipment, and tripping of ground fault interrupters and arc fault interrupters on electrical wiring that is needed to protect wiring from electrical surges. So this is a lot worse than just EM output here.
You know, this sounds like they put together this technology, they didn't get any oversight, they just got guys that said, okay, I want it to do this. Okay, that's what they did, bing, bang, boom, made it, there you go. And then now they're, you know, putting out all kinds of, you know, they're not optimized at all, they're not, you know, very good, they put out all kinds of EMF, they fuck with other, you know, other electronics and stuff. It sounds like these are just very poorly designed. And it's not because they're quote-unquote smart meters, it's because they were designed poorly and they don't give a fuck if it's interfering with other stuff. Because they don't care. All that they want is they just want to make money. You know, that's the whole reason why they're doing this whole smart meter thing. It's because they just want to make money. And, of course, you know, they're going to be contracting out to the lowest bidder, just like the government does, because all that they give a shit about is the bottom line. So that's what you're going to be getting, is you're going to be getting crap.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat a little bit here and kind of go Alex Jones on you. Now, of course, the most likely explanation is that these are just really poorly built meters, like some idiot put them together, and they paid a lot of money on them, so they're pushing them out there so they can make money off them. But I could also see these effects happening if the meters had a secondary purpose, because it says it's screwing with stuff like baby monitors and smart meters. I guess if you can get personal information off them, it must be linked to you in some way. So maybe they're also gathering data that's other than power usage with these meters? Just a thought.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, so there's your Alex Jones thought of the week. You can go and, you know, spout up black helicopters if you want about that. But moving right along, in holy crap, look at this high RPM spin news. Thanks to Wyandi. Piracy blamed for tragic deaths at music festival. Yes, music piracy, the actual downloading offline stuff. Last month, a severe thunderstorm hit the Belgian music festival at Pukkelpop. I have no idea if I'm fucking it up or not. Sorry if I am. During the evening of August 18th, trees fell over, taking down video screens and lights, and one of the stages collapsed as well. This disaster led to the tragic deaths of 5 people. Although most people describe the traumatic event as an accident, insurance experts see it as a pattern. Figaro magazine says that they face a number of similar disasters which are indeed unintended consequences of falling record sales. The bands have a vital need for massive concerts. They pay huge rent stands. They rent huge stands, overloaded with equipment and video spots. The rain and wind did not destroy more than before, but when they fell, that's a lot of damage, an insurance expert explained. Since the music industry has repeatedly blamed piracy for decline in sales, then pirates are also indirectly to blame for the deaths of Pukkelpop. Unbelievable, of course. Aside from the twisted associated with piracy, accidents are of all times, and security is something that should be guaranteed no matter how many visitors an event gets.
you know, have some personal responsibility here, you know? This is not because of piracy. This is because people are charging ridiculous amounts for these concerts. It's because people are charging ridiculous amounts for these CDs. And, you know, you're paying like four or five people every time you buy a CD. You know, you're paying the agent, you're paying this agent, you're paying that person, you're paying this person, you're paying the company. And the artist is barely making a damn thing off of it. And, you know, it's because all these people are trying to get their money, you know? And that's kind of the way the system is. And, you know, have you seen these frickin' concert tickets? 60, 70, 80, 100, 200 bucks? You know, that's ridiculous for a concert. So it's not because of piracy. It's because you guys are assholes and everybody's trying to make money off of it. And B, where the hell is the personal, you know, accountability for this? It may have just been a freak accident, you know? Yeah, it happens. Trees fall, like, who the hell's, you know, planning to have trees fall over on their shit? It's not something that you particularly planned for, you know? This was a natural disaster. It's just that, you know? Five people died. It's a natural disaster. If anything, you know, if there was any type of person that was at fault, they should, you know, take responsibility for it. And if they feel that something should be done about it, then something should be done about it. But don't try and blame this on piracy. This is just some bullshit trying to use five people's deaths for a fucking political gain, which is bullshit.
Yeah, and also you're looking at this, there's no way that piracy could have caused this, because by my what I'm gathering here is this concert probably would have went on anyway. Maybe you wouldn't have the same bands because of the fact that piracy is kind of pushing them a little more to be more public bands, but the point is the concert still would have went on, and the storm probably would have still happened, and so the stage probably would have still fell, even if music piracy wasn't a thing. And also, I dispute the whole record sales is down thing. I've seen them screw the statistics by using physical record sales. Physical record sales have fallen through the floor, but digital record sales and alternative bands that aren't signed with labels have gone through the roof because the media has changed. In surveillance state news, OnStar tracks your car even when you cancel service. Navigational and emergency services company OnStar is notifying its 6 million account holders that it will keep complete accounting of the speed and location of OnStar-equipped vehicles, even for drivers who discontinue monthly service. OnStar began emailing customers on Monday about its update to the privacy policy, which grants OnStar the right to sell its GPS-derived data in anonymized format. Adam Dennison, a spokesman for the General Motors subsidiary, has said OnStar does not currently sell customers' data, but it reserves that right. He said on both new and old privacy policies, both the new and old privacy policies allow OnStar to chronicle a vehicle's every movement and its speed, and though it's not clear where that's stated in the old policy. What's changed is that if you want to cancel your OnStar service, we're going to maintain a two-way connection to your vehicle, unless the customer says otherwise, Dennison said in a phone interview. The connection will continue, he said. We'll make it easier to re-enroll in the program, which charges plans from $19 to $29 monthly to help with navigation and emergencies. The privacy changes take effect in December, Dennison said, adding that the policy reinforces the company's right to sell anonymized data. We hear from organizations periodically requesting this information, he said. He said an example of how the data might be used for the Michigan Department of Transportation to get a feel for traffic usage on a specific section of freeway. The policy also allows the data to be used for marketing purposes by OnStar and other vehicle manufacturers. Collecting location and speed data via GPS might also create a treasure trove of data that could be used in criminal and civil cases. One could easily imagine an eager police chief acquiring the data to issue speeding tickets en masse. Jonathan, Russian name, Zdziarski, Ohio forensic scientist, blogged about the new terms Tuesday. In a telephone interview, he said he was canceling his service and making sure he was disconnected from OnStar's network. He said the new privacy policy goes too far. They added a bullet point allowing him to collect data for any purpose, he said.
If you have OnStar, what you're going to do is you're going to rip it the fuck out. If you have OnStar right now, cancel your subscription and rip the hardware out. If you're not using it, then you don't need it. So rip that shit out. Don't let them do this. This is absolutely freaking ridiculous. You're seeing this more and more and more as a trend with these big companies, as they're blatantly saying that they're going to use your data and use it to sell shit, even if you're not, you know, part of their service anymore. Even if you say, you know, I don't agree with what you're doing, and I'm going to cancel my service, and you leave the hardware in your car, they're still collecting data from you, and they're using that to make money. They're using it for marketing, and then if they're providing it to law enforcement, they just do it because they have the data right there. They can just, you know, say, okay, here it is, and boom, there you go, you know, and this is just wrong, and we need to show OnStar that this is wrong. We need to have as many people, you know, cancel their service and rip the hardware out of their cars, put it in a box, and mail it back to OnStar. You know, put a big freaking, you know, nail right through the middle of the board and send it to OnStar.
I agree totally. It's your car, it's your choice, you should be able to rip out whatever hardware you want. The thing that scares me most about this is the fact that they say you can opt out, and you probably can. You can probably phone and be like, hey, I don't want to be on your service, blah, 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 blah. But keep in mind, they can hide behind bureaucracy pretty well. How often have you tried to cancel something that you legitimately signed up for? Let's say you sign up for something like a cell phone. You're trying to cancel it. How often do you get the runaround? How often do they say it's canceled and then just phone you a couple months later telling you it's not canceled? How often does that happen? I mean, this, you know, you could say, oh, I want this canceled. And then they just wouldn't say anything, and you wouldn't know until you got a speeding ticket, you know, that was on a dead stretch of highway, that they're still tracking you. So definitely, if you're not using their service, rip it out of your car, because you know, even if you try to opt out, they're gonna use it.
I have an even better idea. Now, what we need to do is we need to take these GPS modules, and we need to essentially feed them false data. So essentially where we max them out at that, if that nice little magical number that they use so they wouldn't be used in ICBMs. I forget exactly how fast it was. But if you remember a couple of weeks back, we did that story. What we need to do is just feed them all false data saying that they're going like 6,000 miles an hour or whatever it was.
We can use them to experiment on rockets and see if we can actually get up to that speed.
There you go.
In what the fuck news, Air Force resends grounded stealth fighters into action without fixing them. 4 months after grounding its entire force of F-22 Raptors, the Air Force has cleared roughly 170 high-tech stealth air fighters to resume flying. Just one little problem. The brass still doesn't know why a dozen Raptor pilots blacked out and one fatally crashed, prompting a May 3 no-fly order. Officials suspected the oxygen system aboard the $300 million radar-evading superfighter ground crews starting up the jets and steel garage light hangars may have also been a factor. After months of study, the Air Force still can't say for sure. But the Lockheed built F-22s comprise about half of America's dogfighting fleet. They can't stay grounded forever without eventually jeopardizing national security. Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz said that the risk would be manageable. We now have enough insight from the recent studies and investigations that a return flight is prudent and appropriate. A return to flight is prudent and appropriate, Schwartz said. He ordered careful monitoring of jets and their pilots as the F-22 training system slowly cranks back into gear over a period of months. So pilots are passing out, they don't know why, and they're putting the planes back up anyway.
You know, regardless of the fact, you know, each plane is worth $300 million of taxpayer money. So, you know, these are broken, and they could be crashing, you know. But also, you know, the biggest thing here is people's lives. You know, these aren't just, you know, these are people here that you're gambling. These are highly trained, you know, professionals that we have that put their lives on the line every day for, you know, for us. And we're just saying, oh, your life isn't worth it. So we're not going to invest the money to keep these grounded or to investigate what the problem is. So, fuck you. This is wrong. This is the type of stuff that's wrong with the government today. You know, yes, it costs, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars to keep these F-22s grounded. But if we can save one person's life, then it's worth it.
You know, when you're dealing with something like this of such importance, like, it's quite obviously something with the air system because pilots are blacking out, right? So, if you know there's something wrong with the air system, but you don't know what it is, simple solution. It's expensive, but it's the only way to go at this point. Rip the whole damn thing out and replace it with one you know it works. Like, I wouldn't fuck around with both national security and people's lives at the same time? Yeah, that's highly irresponsible there. And there's no way this can possibly be legal news, thanks to Psychros. After Hack Nightmare, Sony bars lawsuits with new terms of service. After getting the pantsuit off it for security breaches that exposed personal information connected to more than 100 million online accounts, Sony is requiring subscribers to waive their right to wage class action lawsuits for almost any reason. Sony dropped a bombshell in an updated terms of service and user agreement on one of its websites, which if you go to the article, it's actually got it here. It requires people with all accounts on Sony's PlayStation Network to either, or other online services to seek binding arbitration with an arbitrator of the company's choosing, instead of exercising their right to have a judge or jury hear their case. Legal claims can only be filed if a dispute isn't resolved through arbitration in a timely manner. The terms go on to state, any dispute resolution proceedings, whether in arbitration or court, will be conducted only on an individual basis and not in a class or representable action or as a named or unnamed member of a class, consolidated representative or private attorney, general, which is crossed out, legal action. Unless both you and the Sony entity, which you have, with you have a dispute specifically, agree to do so in writing following initiation of the arbitration. Sony subscribers will be required to agree to the terms the next time they sign up to their accounts, effective Thursday, today, if they want to continue using online services. That's today as in this recording, not today as in this broadcast. The changes come 5 months after an attack on the Sony PlayStation Network exposed names, addresses, email addresses, passwords, and other sensitive data for 77 million accounts. Sony shuttered the service for 40 days while cleaning up the mess. In the weeks following, attacks were found to hit Sony Online Entertainment, the company's computer game service, and the Sony Pictures website, exposing personal information for 25 million more accounts.
Now, one thing that really isn't kind of made clear in this article is you can opt out of this. You have to send Sony a letter specifically saying that you do not want to have this resolved through arbitration. You have to specifically say that you request being able to take it to court. So you can get around this, but a lot of people aren't because people are kind of stupid and don't really want to bother whenever their rights get stepped on like this. So, you know, if you do have a PSN account, either A, stop using it, or B, you know, send them a letter here and tell them that you would like to have this, you know, resolved through court. You'd like to keep the right to have it resolved through court proceedings.
The problem is, because it's the terms of service for using a private service, they might just deny you access to the service for doing that. So, I mean, really, this is a hugely evil move on the move of Sony, and
they can't actually legally bar you from the service just for doing that. They have to provide you with if they do say that they'd like to have it done through arbitration, they may add that to the terms of service. They have to allow you to opt out and send in a letter stating that you'd like to have it done through court proceedings. One other thing that Pseudocrow, who's actually here in my recording studio, aka my apartment with me, is he actually said that it has to be done within 30 days. So after 30 days of agreeing to this, you have to have sent that letter in. So you have to kind of jump on it real quick if you actually decide to send them a letter.
Okay, so if that's the case, if you want to keep using your Sony account, jump online. I'm sure someone's made a form letter that's legally sound that you can just fill in the details and send off to them. But this kind of thing is kind of ridiculous here, because like they're trying to deal with an individual basis. The reason why is because the fact that if you go to arbitration on an individual basis, and of course they tell you to fuck off, which is probably what they'll do in most cases, or give you some pittance of a settlement, then when you have to go individually pursue it in court, then if you can't do a class action, chances are you can't afford to actually fight Sony, which is what they're going for here. They'll spend less money fighting a million people individually than fighting a million people in a class action. So make sure that everyone knows about this and either boycotts their service, like I will, not hard, I don't use many of their products, or get that letter in as Misanthropic just mentioned. In T-1000 News, thanks to Wyandi, research is developing a new form of life that's made of metal. We're all familiar with the idea of metallic life forms like sentient robots. But somewhere out there, metallic life may actually have evolved, just like organic life has here on Earth. A Scottish research group is out to prove this is possible by creating, reproducing, and evolving synthetic cells made entirely of metal. There's really no reason why metallic life forms can't exist. It's just that we haven't met any, and no one's sure how it would work. To prove that is at least physically possible, a team from the University of Glasgow has created some cell-like bubbles called iChels out of metallic elements like tungsten bonded with oxygen and phosphorus. These bubbles can self-assemble, and they exhibit many of the same properties that allow biological cells to do what they do, including an internal structure and a selectively porous outer membrane that can let other molecules pass through. It may even be possible to set the metallic cells up to perform photosynthesis. The tricky bit at this point is to figure out how to imbue the metallic cells with something like DNA to allow them to self-replicate and evolve. But this may in fact be possible. The bubbles can use each other as templates to create more bubbles. Experiments suggest that they may even be able to alter their own chemistry to adapt to different environments. If this all works to the point where we can at least say that yes, it's definitely possible for metallic life forms to evolve, it would be massive. It would have massive implications for our search for extraterrestrial life. I'm just going to answer Legion right here. Evolution doesn't have a point. It's just adapting to your environment to become better suited to survive. So you can't really ever say anything is going to evolve into anything. It just changes depending on the environment. Like, that's the reason why there's black people and white people. If there's more sun, you're going to get black people because they're protecting from the sun. If you're in an area with less sun, you're going to have white skin that absorb more sunlight. Simple change like that.
You know, this is really, really cool, you know, and I could see a lot of cool medical implications for stuff like this, you know, setting a set number of, you know, hopefully parameters that they could meet, and you could, you know, create new bone and stuff, and they could actually reproduce, and you'd be able to, you know, fill in gaps in bones and stuff like that, so you could, instead of having, you know, surgical implants to replace bone, you could have, you know, these, which would be really, really cool, you know. And so it's just, you know, something to keep an eye on here. I think it's very interesting work here. And, you know, that's really what science is. Science really is, you know, pushing the bounds of what we think is, you know, reasonable, what we can, you know, what we think we can do and what the truth is right now. So, you know, the truth is always kind of liquid here whenever you're coming to the end, you know, the bleeding edge of science there. So things aren't always what they seem. So it could turn out pretty cool.
In unfair trial news, thanks to the doctor for this one. Judge worries recording police will lead to excessive snooping around. Judge Richard A. Posner isn't known as for his genteel treatment of parties whose arguments he doesn't agree with. But when an attorney for the American Civil Liberties Union began to make his opening statement on a Tuesday oral argument, Posner cut him off after 14 words. "Yeah, I know," he said dismissively, "but I'm not interested, really, in what you have to do and what you want to do with these recordings of people's encounters with the police." The topic was of the constitutionality, topic was the constitutionality of unusually strict Illinois wiretapping law, which makes it illegal to record someone without his consent, even if the recording is done openly in a public space. The ACLU was asking the panel of three judges from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit to strike down the law on First Amendment grounds. But Judge Posner wasn't having it. "Once all this stuff can be recorded, there's going to be a lot more snooping around by reporters and bloggers," he said. He was particularly worried that allowing recording that would impact police work. "I'm always suspicious when the civil liberties people start telling the police how to do their business," he said. He speculated that gangs would love the ACLU's argument because these recordings would make it easier to discover and retaliate against informants. How? Posner may find himself on the losing side of the argument. Both Posner's fellow Seventh Circuit judges, Seventh Circuit judges seem more receptive to the ACLU's argument. They reserve most of their fire for the government's attorney. The statute criminalizes any audio taping without regard to expectation of privacy, even if those events are being audiotaped, occur in the open, in public, for anyone to see and hear, and otherwise observe, one of the judges said. It's extremely broad.
The one thing that really strikes me wrong, and if you guys don't know, I'm actually in Illinois, so I'm quite familiar with this law, is it essentially says that as a, you know, police officer, which is a public servant on a public street, you know, in plain view of other people, in, you know, hearing shot and vision of other people, it is illegal to make an audio recording of them. Now, the thing is, though, now the thing that really is wrong is a lot of these cops have body mics on them. So they're actually recording you, but you can't actually record them without their permission. Now, you can ask their permission, and some cops would be perfectly fine with you, you know, asking for permission to record them, and they'd probably say yes. But a good number of them get quite defensive whenever you start asking to do that. And this law is different than any other in the country, you know, and any other part of the United States. There is no reasonable expectation to privacy while on a public street. Especially if you're a public servant. You know, any encounter with police can be recorded with either audio or video by either the person that is having the stop done or somebody who is, you know, just walking down the street, as long as they aren't interfering with the police and the you know, in their line of duty and in doing their job. So they're standing, you know, sufficiently far back, you know, they're not, you know, going right up into the cop's face, you know, they're not sticking a camera right in their face and all that stuff, which does happen. But you know, as long as you're not interfering with them, it's perfectly legal to record them, and a lot of cops don't have any problem with it. But again, you know, some dicks do. This guy is, you know, the fact that he says that the ACLU shouldn't be telling police how to do their jobs just tells me that this guy is doing everything wrong and he should not be a judge, period. Because, you know, the ACLU, if they have a legal basis to be saying that what you're doing is illegal, then guess what? They kind of have to comply. If it's deemed that what they're doing is illegal, they have to change what they're doing, and that includes the police.
This judge is an idiot, and I can tell because he's all like, oh, there's going to be this huge, you know, gang problems and people recording police and blah, 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 blah. And if you look at everywhere else around America and most of the free world, you don't have those problems with people recording police. I mean, yeah, police may not like being recorded, but if you are running up and interfering with police, like running up and shoving a camera in their face, there are other laws they can nail you under, interfering with an arrest or impeding justice and stuff like that. They don't need wiretapping laws to keep you from screwing with them. We need wiretapping laws to keep them from screwing with us.
And that really is the truth, you know. But moving on to something a little bit lighter, in happy sky clearance news, falling NASA satellite, complete coverage of the UR's spacecraft's fiery demise. A dead NASA satellite called the Upper Atmosphere Research Satellite is falling uncontrolled towards Earth and is expected to crash into the ground later this week. Agency officials are unable to pinpoint the exact time and location of the fall, but said that there's little risk of debris landing in populated areas. Closest estimate is that the satellite will fall from the atmosphere on Friday. It's expected to hit the Earth in several chunks, the largest of which being about 300 pounds. The satellite is roughly the size of the school bus, and most of it will come apart upon re-entry. There's little risk of it actually hitting anyone or anything because, again, you know, most of the Earth is made up of water or uninhabited land. But from what I heard is from what I understand, there's about a 1 in 3,3200 chance that it will hit someone somewhere, which is fairly big, but, you know, again, still, it's doing that. You know, fairly small, and there's nothing really we can do.
Yeah, it's a 1 in 3,200 chance of hitting, like, a human, but it's like a 1 in 3.6 billion chance of actually, like, hitting you.
Yeah, exactly, hitting you. So, the odds are pretty good that it's not going to hit anything, you know, especially breaking up into, like, you know, into just a couple of chunks, you know, it's pretty unlikely to actually hit something. Nobody has actually ever been hit by any piece of spacecraft coming down. So, you know, it happens all the time. And this is just a little bit more, you know, in the news and stuff than normal. But for those of you who don't know what sky clearance is, it's the holiday from the old 80s TV show called Max Headroom. It's specifically from the episode called Lessons, which aired on 5 May 1988. And the Zigzag Corporation holds an annual destruction of its outdated satellites, and the citizenry of the Earth celebrate in the streets in kind of like a Mardi Gras-like festival where revelers carry makeshift steel umbrellas to protect themselves from the shower debris. You know, everybody's out, you know, out in the streets, you know, fireworks, and people are drinking, and everybody's having a good time. So I just urge all of you, you know, tomorrow, for all of you, all the people that are listening live, you know, tomorrow is the day that they're expecting it to come down. So I say, you know, go out with your steel umbrellas. Go, you know, go out, go drink, go have fun in the streets, you know, because it's time for sky clearance. So I just like to wish everybody a safe and happy sky clearance tomorrow. And moving on to Recomedia, we have The Secret History of Silicon Valley, thanks to Jule Verboven. And today, Silicon Valley is known around the world as the fount of technology and innovation, and development fueled by private venture capital and peopled by fabled entrepreneurs. But it wasn't always so. Unbeknownst to even seasoned inhabitants, today's Silicon Valley has its start in government secrecy and wartime urgency. In this lecture, renowned serial entrepreneur Steve Blank presents how the roots of Silicon Valley sprang not from the late development of the silicon semiconductor, but instead from the earlier technological duel over the skies of Germany and secret efforts around and over the Soviet Union. So, you know, this is a good little documentary here. You know, it's just a speech and a lecture, and it's pretty interesting. Something you might not know about. Now, moving on to Cyberpunk Kit, we have the 2 terabyte USB 3.0 flash drive, thanks to Maltos. And this is Yugo's note here. It doesn't appear that there is actually an existent, you know, 2 terabyte flash drive, but this technology can make it possible very soon. Taiwan's ITRI and Transcend is teamed up to create a USB 3.0 thumb drive featuring 2 terabytes of storage. During Display Taiwan, Transcend and Taiwan's ITRI displayed a finger-long USB stick that reportedly offers 2 terabytes of storage. That's no typo. It somehow holds up to 2 terabytes worth of information. So far, neither company has released anything official in regards of to specs or simple introduction, nor does the high-capacity USB 3.0 stick appear on Display Taiwan's website. But seen below in the video below is the thin card thumb drive that's even smaller than the thumb, measuring slightly thicker than a penny. It offers a minimum of 16 gigabytes and a maximum of 2 terabytes. According to the representative, the USB stick hasn't become available thus far because an international standard for USB 3.0 has yet to be set. That said, ITRI and Transcend won't push the tech onto the market until USB gives the international green light on version 3.0. What we have here is bullet-resistant skin, thanks to Wyandi. And another one of Hugo's notes here is that he added this under Daily Hacks because this video is... It's a video and not an article that can be read, but it's still very, very cool. And a Dutch artist has blended spider silk with human skin to produce a super-strong material that can stop a bullet at half its regular speed. Jalila Essiadi, I don't know how the hell to say that. Yeah, I'm probably butchering that pretty good. Collaborated with cell biologist, oh good lord, Adol Wahib El Galbazori to produce the material, which is 3 times tougher than Kevlar. That's a pretty cool, you know, very, very good, you know. What I think would be really cool is if you were able to incorporate this into cow skin and we somehow made leather jackets out of this. That's what we need to do next. But moving on into the daily hacks here is In the Clear, thanks to the doctor. And this is designed for activists. In the Clear is a suite of applications that makes it easy to send a distress call via SMS and then torch the contents of one's mobile device in the event that the aggressors are closing in. You know, this is just something that's kind of nice to have on your phone, regardless if you're a political activist or not. You know, you're sitting there, you think somebody's chasing you, somebody's following you, you know, somebody that you may not like is after you. The Mexican mafia is after you, you know. All the cartels and stuff down there, they're coming after you. So, you know, torture shit, you know. Don't be a data litter bug. Don't let them get your information. So, you know, have that on your phone just in case. And another thing that we have, thanks to Jule Verboven, is some 3D printing stuff. 3D printing for 10-year-olds, which is Joris Peels and Arthur Chuchukanov. Both former iMaterialese employees have started Origo, which is a company which aims to develop a 3D printer for kids, which is really, really cool. And the first project to give your 10-year-old print your own AR-15 magazine. So that's pretty cool, you know. Don't give these companies money. Make your own, which is even better. And interesting milestone in open source 3D printing over at Thingiverse. I don't know what the hell that is. User Crank has published a freely downloadable magazine for the ubiquitous AR-15 rifle. As downloaded, Crank's magazine only hands 5 rounds, but a person with basic 3D modeling skills could modify it with a little difficulty to produce a quote-unquote high capacity, which I hate that term, magazine. I'm not sure what the current state of law on magazine size limit is, but prior to the sunset of federal assault weapons ban in 2004, manufacture of an AR-15 magazine with a capacity of more than 10 rounds was an offense. It is no longer an offense. Actually, you can pretty much have the as big of a magazine as you'd like, as long as you're not in specific areas that have laws against it. There are some states and counties and stuff like that that actually have quote-unquote high-capacity magazine bans. So, you know, just check your local laws, but there's no federal law against it. You can have pretty... Usually, in most states, you can have as big of a magazine as you want. So, as Crank reports in the magazine, which consists of printable body, follower, spring, and base plate, is fully functional. At least for a few rounds. He says he's used the magazine with no jams or feed problems yet. It works, but be reminded it's only a printed ABS magazine, and if you use a printed ABS mag spring, be prepared for stress relaxation of the polymer over time, especially if it's kept loaded over a long period of time. And Hugo's note here is, as an added bonus, lower on the page is a blurb on printing your own AR-15 receiver as well. And this is for educational purposes only. I'm not sure I would really trust it. But I think that's pretty cool. You know, I think we all need to have stuff like that. You know, be able to learn to make our own things.
That, my microphone was muted. Don't worry, we'll be back next week to make sure you can get the news you need to survive. If you cannot contribute to the show, please distribute it. We'd like to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for assistance in gathering data. If you have any news stories or any pertinent information you want to send us, you can reach us at news@rostudios.org. That's news@rostudios.org. If you like the music in the background, check out the album Overcoat, a cyberpunk adventure by Overcoat, which was sent in by Jewel Verboven. We fade out now with a track called Floor B66, also from Overcoat, but not from the same album. Remember everyone, we cannot defeat the enemy through each other's throats. So until next time, that's what server said. End of line.